Oh, well done, Grandmother. Played like a professional.
Oh, I think this is my favorite part of Christmas. The children are in bed, the strains of the day are over, and we can sit by the fire listening to Grandmother playing her organ.
Yes, there's another one, Grandma.
Well, perhaps you'd better rest for a while. She has been playing for 5 hours.
In the meantime, why doesn't Uncle Montague tell us one of his Christmas ghost stories?
Oh, yes. Yes, a ghost story.
Oh, my friends, I couldn't.
All right, then.
I can tell one if you really want me to.
No, it was selfish of us to suggest it. You must be tired out.
No, not at all. Honestly.
Well, I am. Perhaps some other time.
No, please let me tell you a ghost story. I want to. But please.
You're very well.
Right. I will. Now then, draw your chairs closer to the fire. Refill your glasses and prepare to hear a tale of the dark and malign forces which span the centuries, waiting to ensnare the unwary. Prepare to hear the tale of the Teeth of Abbot Thomas.
We present The Teeth of Abbot Thomas by Stephen Sheridan, with me, Alfred Marx, as the Abbot.
It happened 20 years ago. On the 15th of December, 1911, a train left London for the Norfolk coast. On board was a quiet, reclusive Cambridge academic called Dr. Seymour Lazarus Bonteen, who intended to spend the forthcoming festive season in scholarly seclusion. The journey seemed to take forever, but was probably little more than 3 days. On arrival, he booked into a guest house run by one Mrs. Halliday, and there, little suspecting the sinister powers which would soon overwhelm him, he settled down to enjoy the one frivolous pursuit he allowed himself, translating the works of Plato into Sanskrit.
Pancratium. Now, what's the Sanskrit for pancratium?
Finished your breakfast, Dr. Bonteen?
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Halliday.
I trust everything was to your satisfaction. How was the bacon?
Not as nice as the bacon I had here last year.
Oh, it should have been. It came from the same packet.
By the way, I found this in the toast rack.
Ah, my hacksaw. I'll be needing that later. I'm going to board up all the windows.
Really? Why?
To help keep out drafts. Of course, it's like an icebox in here.
An icebox? My dear Mrs. Halliday, you've got 6 fires in here. It's probably colder inside a crematorium.
Ah, you're only saying that because you've got a fever.
I have not got a fever.
No? Why are you all hot and sweaty then?
It's probably because you smothered me with blankets and hot water bottles.
You can't be too careful, not with fevers. My husband died of a fever.
No, he didn't. He asphyxiated after you nailed shut his bedroom windows during a heatwave.
Well, that's what the coroner said, but I know what I know.
Incidentally, have you seen my Greek to Sanskrit dictionary anywhere?
A big red book?
Yes, that's the one.
I tore it up and used the pages as draft excluders.
Oh, really, Mrs. Halliday, that's the third one this week.
As the weather was fine, Bonteen decided to spend the rest of the day visiting some of the rural churches in the area. Travelling by velocipede, he was able to take in no fewer than 5. However, upon arrival at the 6th, Crippledance Parish Church, he was dismayed to discover an insuperable impediment to his entry into that ecclesiastical establishment.
Blast, the door's locked. Excuse me. Yes, you, gravedigger.
Me, sir?
You are a gravedigger, aren't you?
Oh, good heavens, no, sir.
Well, then why are you digging that 6-foot pit in the churchyard?
It's a hobby.
Hobby? You dig graves for a hobby?
That's right, sir. I find it helps calm my nerves after...
After you've what?
Can I help you, sir?
I'm trying to get into the church. I want to visit the sacristy.
Oh, I wouldn't waste my time if I was you, sir. There's nothing in that sacristy save for a couple of old missal books and an 18th century psalter I wouldn't blow my nose on, sir.
You know something of these matters, Mr...
Stump, sir. Zebedee Stump, sir. You might say, like yourself, I'm something of an amateur antiquary. I built up quite a collection of curios over the years.
Indeed.
I tell you what, why don't you come home with me, sir? I'll show you some of it.
I wouldn't want to wish to inconvenience you.
Just no trouble, sir. I only live a stone's throw away over in Slum Street. You'll see more of interest in my back bedroom than in a dozen sacristies.
Bonteen studied the dirty, pustular little man. Surely such a creature couldn't possess anything worth seeing. No, Bonteen decided. Only a complete fool would agree to accompany him home.
I'm glad you decided to accompany me home, sir.
Would you mind coughing in the other direction? I've only just had this suit cleaned.
Oh, I apologize, sir. I'm just getting over a bad attack of swine fever.
Oh, surely that's a disease of pigs.
Ah, that's a wonderful way to be educated, sir. I'm prey to many strange ailments. Before swine fever, I had cowpox. And before that, myxomatosis. And before that, Dutch elm disease.
Dutch elm disease?
I've got a wooden leg.
Indeed.
I lost a real one a year back. Oh, it's the last time I'll ever visit a blind sheriff Baldist. Ah, here we are. Oh, home, sweet home. Ah. Mary! Your stumpies are home. I'll just lock up Dr. Monty.
You seem to have an inordinate number of bolts on your front door. Enough for a prison. Who are you trying to keep in?
Oh, so I want to keep in, sir. It's who I want to keep out.
What's that in the corner? Some sort of ornamental gargoyle?
That's my wife, sir. Her name's Mary.
Ah, I'm delighted to meet you, ma'am.
I'm afraid Mary can't speak, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
However, she is able to communicate by means of a tin whistle. You show the gentleman, Mary. Mary says, welcome to our home. You'll find us humble but honest.
You mean you understand, huh?
Oh, every piece of home. Mary says, would you care for a cup of tea?
Yes, I'd love one.
Milk and sugar.
Please.
Let's go through to the parlour, so I'm going to take the weight off my foot through here, sir. Ah, drink up, sir. You hasn't touched your tea.
There appears to be an earwig floating in my cup.
Oh, what did I say? Was that an earwig? My left eyebrow must have come off when I was stirring the pot. You know how it is, sir, when you've got mange.
This is a most impressive collection you have.
Thank you, sir.
I particularly like this 18th century tobacco pouch.
That there used to belong to the Duke of Truro. His two passions in life were smoking and shooting. He kept baccy in one part of the pouch and gunpowder in the other. Unfortunately, one day he filled his pipe from the wrong compartment. They do say his head was blown off way to France.
Quite charming. I scarcely expect to find such a treasure in a place like this.
Things wasn't always quite so bad. I used to be quite prosperous until...
Until what?
Another cup of tea, sir.
No, thank you.
Oh.
Sorry?
Mary was just wondering what field of study you're engaged in, sir.
Oh, well, by training, I'm an anthropologist. I'm currently researching the history of surgical appliances.
Oh, indeed, sir.
You're studying how man has augmented his failing body through the ages. I doubt you've read my paper on the truss in pedonestic Assyria.
I'm afraid that one escaped me, sir.
Well, at the moment, I'm putting the finishing touches to an exhaustive study of British dentures.
False teeth. You're interested in... false teeth! Oh,
yes.
Precisely what I was thinking, Mary. I has something very special that might interest you, Dr. Bunty. You see that dresser over there?
Yes.
You put your hand into the top drawer. That's it. Do you feel anything?
Well, I don't know.
Ow! No! Not the mouth trap, sir. Next to that, there should be an old tin box.
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, well, you open it up and see what's inside.
Good Lord. A set of wooden false teeth. They're beautiful, quite unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Oh, those dentures date back to the 14th century, sir.
Oh, no, that's not possible. And yet, I confess that the carving and craftsmanship appear genuine enough.
Oh, they're not forgery, sir. I promise you that.
But these teeth predate the earliest set of dentures in existence by almost a century. Mm. They completely overturn accepted theories of medieval tooth care.
Yeah, I dare say them teeth would be a great help to you in your work.
They've been invaluable. Are you saying they're for sale?
I am, sir. I am.
How much do you want for them? Name your price.
Well, shall we say 10 shillings?
10 shillings?
All right, then. 5.
But these teeth are priceless. You're practically giving them away.
Well, the money don't matter. I've waited so long for someone like you to take these teeth off my hands. If only you knew.
What was that?
That was Mary, sir. She uses yawn when she's angry. She thinks I've been talking a mite too much.
If your offer is genuine, then here are the 5 shillings.
And here,
I'll get tea.
Oh, I really can't thank you enough.
Oh, wait till you've had them a few days. See if you want to thank me then.
My budgie's dead, sir.
Hmm?
I said my budgie's dead.
Really? Dead, eh?
Spontaneous combustion.
Spontaneous combustion?
Mm-hmm. I was holding the poor little mite over the fire to warm him when, quite unexpectedly, he burst into flames. I tried putting him out with whiskey, but it did no good. Oh, fourth one this month. Oh, well, I better sweep him up. Hand me my dustpan.
Hmm?
Dr. Bontine, you're not listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mind's on other things.
Are you still examining those horrid teeth?
I can't believe my good fortune. They're undoubtedly genuine. Stump must have been mad to sell them.
Maybe he knew more than he let on.
I'm sorry, I'm not with you.
I don't know. Perhaps I'm just a stupid old woman.
What do you mean, perhaps?
But I sense an aura of evil coming from those dentures. If they're not teeth of ill omen, I'll parboil my head.
Oh, nonsense. These teeth will make my name. The Elgin Marbles, the Bodleian Library, and now the Bontine Dentures. They'll bring me nothing but good luck. Ow!
What happened?
Oh, I cut my finger on one of the incisors.
Oh.
It's bleeding.
Oh, let me cauterize the wound.
No, thank you. No. I'm just a little overtired. I think I'll turn in.
Oh, it's icy cold in that bedroom, sir. Here, why don't you spend the night down here with me? We could huddle together beneath a blanket, conserving body heat. What do you say?
I'd sooner wash my hair in a spittoon.
Oh, as you wish, sir. If you don't wake up with frostbite, I'll spit roast my spleen.
In fact, the heat of the bedroom was greater than ever. The walls were starting to buckle, and a desert was forming under the window. As Bontine lay on his bed, gasping for breath, he was increasingly aware of the teeth next to him on the table. Illuminated by the fires burning in the grates, they seemed to grin malevolently, mocking him, challenging him to uncover their dark secrets. If he hadn't briefly fainted from heat exhaustion, Bontine would have been awake all night. As it was, he felt more dead than alive when he staggered from his room next morning.
Mrs. Halliday, Mrs. Halliday, when can I expect some breakfast?
You're awake then.
No, I'm still asleep in bed. Where are you? I can hear you, but I can't see you.
I'm overhead, sir, up in the loft.
In the loft?
I'm putting down some extra insulation to help prevent heat loss.
I'll be careful.
Don't worry, I've been up here before. The loft is perfectly secure. I'm quite sure.
Oh, dear, oh, Lord. I must have gone straight through the ceiling. Straight through. Oh, it's a good thing I landed on you, Dr. Bontine, or I might have been seriously hurt. Dr. Bontine, are you all right? Oh, you look cold, Dr. Bontine. Here, I'll move you nearer the fire.
No. My trousers are starting to smoulder. Pull me back.
Oh, no. What a lot of fuss he's made.
Isn't it bad enough that I have bruising, concussion, and a broken ankle without you trying to give me third-degree burns?
No. I'm just following doctor's orders.
He said I was to be kept warm, not incinerated. Good heavens, woman, I saw a mirage earlier.
A mirage?
I thought I saw a hideous, deformed old crone go past the window. She was bent double with an enormous hump on her back.
That was no mirage. That was me carrying a sack of coal to the cellar. What are you doing, sir?
Have you seen my crutch? I'm going out.
Oh, it's like the Arctic outside, sir. If you don't catch pneumonia, I'll stir-fry my sternum in a wok.
I'm not going any further than the Three Jolly Plague Carriers alehouse. I need a drink. Barman, a pint of porter and a stool to rest my ankle on, please.
Oh, there we go.
Well, if it isn't Dr. Bontine.
I'm sorry, do I know you?
Well, 'tis me, sir. Zabidi Stump.
Bontine stared at the little man in disbelief, for the crooked, diseased, perverted old pauper, who was as far from being an oil painting as it's possible to get, had, overnight, been transformed into a fit, healthy man, full 30 years younger. His once twisted frame showed no sign of illness or deformity.
Are you all right, sir? Sir, administer that consoline.
Oh, no, I'm fine. It's just the shock.
Oh.
I can't believe how you've changed. You look almost human.
Selling all those damn touches was the best day's work I ever did.
That dread curse is lifted from me.
What do you mean?
As soon as I got rid of them, all my helmets cleared up. Dropsy, scrofula, brucellosis, foot and mouth, all of them gone.
I've even waved goodbye to my leprous hands. See, there's no danger of my fingers dropping off now. They're ever so firm. You pull them and see. Mm. Go on, harder. They're completely secure. Oh, well, that one was still a bit loose, but the rest is rock solid. I reckon I could hang from a doorframe by him, I do honest.
Well, I fail to see what this has to do with the teeth.
There's blood on them teeth, sir. Why else do you think I sold them for 5 shillings? No one who possesses them dentures will ever know aught but misery and woe.
Superstitious nonsense.
Oh, you've only started to feel their evil power. Accidents, sleepless nights, failing of the oath, that's only the beginning. Soon you'll become prey to strange desires. Your living body will be a twitching tomb of unnatural passions.
I've never felt an unnatural passion in my life. Unless you count that time.
You think you're so clever with your fancy ways. You know nothing! You don't even know whose teeth they are.
Well, whose are they?
They are the teeth of Abbot Thomas.
Oh, didn't he write Charlie's Aunt?
That was Brandon Thomas.
Oh, yes.
Abbot Thomas was a medieval tyrant. A wicked man steeped in sin and infamy. The legends do say those teeth were made for him by the devil's own dentist. If you want my advice, you'll sell them the way I did. Until you do, may God have mercy on you. For the teeth of Abbot Thomas never will.
Though by no means superstitious, Bontien found Stump's words profoundly unsettling. His feeling of unease was further compounded by a number of bizarre accidents which engulfed Mrs. Halliday's guest house. However, Bontien might have been willing to dismiss these as strange quirks of fate if the following had not occurred.
Eat up your broth before it evaporates.
I'm not hungry.
Oh, pass me that box of nails. I'm putting some extra insulation round the doors.
Here you are.
Oh, thank you, sir.
My word, Mrs. Halliday.
Hmm?
Has anyone ever told you what lovely old hands you have?
Well, now you come to mention it, no.
Oh, they're very smooth, they're very attractive. The flesh, it looks firm and succulent.
Oh, my hand! You bit it! I'm so sorry. Oh, you've nicked out quite a chunk.
Yeah, I don't know what came over me. I had this sudden, overwhelming urge to bite.
Oh! You haven't been the same since you bought them teeth.
Unnatural passions. Stump spoke of unnatural passions.
What's that?
Is there a library in the town?
Oh, yeah, horrible, drafty place.
There's something I must look up.
May I help you, sir? I am the chief librarian.
Yes, I'm interested in a quasi-historical figure.
Yes?
Called, I believe, Abbot Thomas.
Oh, Abbot Thomas, I hope never to hear that evil name again.
You know of him?
I have done since childhood. My father used to threaten me with him. Don't chew your food like that, he'd say. Use your mouth. If you don't, Abbot Thomas will get you.
Oh, I understand his cruelty was legendary.
No, he wasn't. He was the best dad a boy ever had.
I meant the abbot. Is there a book about him?
Oh, you'll find a brief account of his life in the Tales of Old Norfolk. There's a copy by your elbow.
Ah, yes.
Read it at your peril. It's not a tale for the faint-hearted. I've known men with voices as deep as Henry Irving faint away after reading it. Manly baritones have been physically sick before the end.
Well, I'll take the risk. Here we are.
Oh.
The Life and Legend of Abbot Thomas. In the year of our Lord, 1411, all Norfolk was in fear of the dread Abbot Thomas. A man of cruel and violent disposition, his base brutality was never more apparent than when dealing with malefactors at his spiritual court.
This spiritual court is now in session.
Abbot Thomas says this spiritual court is now in session. Silence, everyone! Silence! Silence!
Thank you, Brother Hugo.
Silence!
Thank you, Brother Hugo. Read the charges.
Read the charges! Abbot Thomas demands that the charges be read.
Go on.
Oh, do I do this bit?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I'm new to this spiritual court business.
Nigel the Nettle Plucker, You are charged that you danced wantonly and naughtily on the Sabbath day in direct contravention of church edicts.
This is a serious matter, Nigel the Nettle Plucker. What have you to say in your defense?
What's wrong with a bit of jigging about? I was enjoying myself.
A poor excuse. Hmm? If all merciful God had meant mankind to enjoy itself, he never would have said, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." You have deliberately disobeyed church law. Do you know how I punish those who do that?
Oh, no, great Abbot Thomas. No, not that.
How do I punish them, Nigel the Nettle Plucker?
You bite them.
I bite them? I chew them, munch them, and make them suffer. And that's what I'm going to do to you.
Abbot Thomas has passed judgment. What a tense and dramatic moment.
Don't commentate.
Sorry.
Mercy, great Abbot. Have mercy.
Come here and be bitten.
No, no.
In the whole of Norfolk, no one, from the highest nobleman to the humblest peasant, escaped the abbot's cruel bite. But the years took their toll, and slowly the abbot began to lose his teeth. Until one fateful day.
Miriam Baru here, you have been found guilty of smiling on the Sabbath and referring to the suffragan Bishop of Crewe as old dung-faced. Come here and be bitten.
Stay away from me, you fiend.
Let me bite you, woman.
Oh! Abbot Thomas, what has happened?
My last two teeth have come out. I don't have a tooth left in the head.
God be praised. A miracle.
Great was the rejoicing throughout Norfolk.
We're free! We're finally free! Simon Thomas can bite us no more.
What's going on here?
Abbot Thomas! Don't be afeard. He can't hurt us. He ain't got no teeth.
You think not? Then look into my mouth.
Teeth! He's got wooden teeth!
You fools! I knew one day I would lose my own teeth. I was prepared for the eventuality. For months, a team of craftsmen have toiled day and night to make me a pair of wooden false teeth. They are, I promise you, quite lethal. Let me demonstrate.
Don't say that! Don't say that!
No! No! No!
With his deadly dentures in place, the abbot embarked on a new reign of terror. Whole villages were wiped out, as his teeth held sway over all. But his days were numbered. A band of rebels decided the cruel tyrant had to die. One dark night, they stole into the abbey and cut the abbot's throat. When the sun came up, they realized they had broken into the wrong abbey.
Oh, no!
The rebels apologized to the monks.
Oh, sorry.
Reprimanded their map reader.
No!
And headed for Thomas's abbey. Battering down the door with a monk, they poured inside.
What's going on?
There he is!
You will all be severely bitten for this outrage!
Your biting days are over, Abbot Thomas! Get in!
The fighting lasted for hours and the casualties were severe. Simpkin the rebel had both his hands bitten off, and David the deformed lost all three ears. But finally the abbot was overwhelmed and the teeth ripped from his gums. Inflamed with bloodlust, the rebels took the abbot and bricked him up in a disused part of the abbey, leaving him to perish. Yet many believe his tormented spirit still walks abroad, searching for his stolen dentures. What happened to the teeth, no one knows. But it is certain that such evil objects will never bring anything but doom to those who seek to possess them.
Oh, my God.
Are you all right, sir? You're not looking well. Sir! Wait a moment! Come back! Come back!
As Bonteen hurried through the night, his mind was in turmoil. He realized that he had in his possession something of infinite evil. He knew that if he was to save his soul, he had to destroy the teeth. When he arrived back at the guest house, he found Mrs. Halliday sprinkling the furniture with petrol.
That's my latest idea for heating the rooms. You pour on the petrol, then you strike a match.
Later, Mrs. Halliday. I have work to do. Wild work.
There's a gentleman to see you, sir.
What? No one knows I'm here.
Most insistent he was. I told him to wait in the parlour.
Oh. Good evening, sir. May I help?
I want something from you.
I've already given.
What?
Well, aren't you collecting for charity? Help the aged or something?
You fool! You mortal fool! I want my teeth!
Who are you?
You still don't know? Then feast your eyes on the face of Abbot Thomas!
As the giant figure stepped from the shadows, Bontine could see him at last. He had a large, grey head. He tossed it lightly from hand to hand. His own head was fleshy and pale, the face a tattered testament to the ravages of time. The moist black mouth opened and closed rhythmically. The dark tongue played about the naked gums.
Stay away from me, you hellhound.
My teeth! Keep me back, my teeth!
Bontine tried to open the door. To his horror, it was stuck. Mrs. Halliday's new insulation had formed an immovable wedge.
Mrs. Halliday, let me out! Mrs. Halliday!
It's me, my teeth!
Here they are, take them, take them!
At last! A teeth! Yeah. After centuries of sucking, I can bite again.
Mrs. Halliday!
You will be the first to feel my teeth about you.
You know to bite me? I have a terrible skin condition. I'm probably infectious.
I would taste your flesh if you were the last leper in hell. Come to me. Come and be bitten.
Stay away from me. No, 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 no.
When they found Bontine, he was slumped in the corner, unconscious. Of the ghastly spectral abbot, there was no sign. Bontine was taken to hospital and there declared hopelessly insane. Shortly after, he returned to Cambridge to resume his academic career. He lives there still and has become an open and friendly man. But from that day to this, he has always refused to discuss the remarkable affair of the teeth of Abbot Thomas.
There we are, Harold, Emily. One of my better stories, I think. You've been unusually quiet, gripped by the narrative, I take it. Harold? Emily?
We're just coming, Uncle Montague.
We've been in the kitchen making ourselves hot drinks. We'll need them to fortify us when you start telling your ghost story.
When I start telling it? Uncle Montague? What's the matter?
Surely you didn't think we were still in here. Surely you haven't been telling it to yourself.
I'm going to my room. Uncle Montague?
I'll see you in the morning.
I wonder what got into him.
What shall we do now?
Let's wake up Grandmother and have some music.
Come on, Grandma. Back to the organ.
We're not letting you go to bed until you've played every carol in the book. Merry Christmas, Harold.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Grandmother.
That was The Teeth of Abbot Thomas by Stephen Sheridan. Abbot Thomas was played by me, Alfred Marks. Also featured were Robert Bathurst as Dr. Bontine, Denise Coffey as Mrs. Halliday, Jonathan Adams as Uncle Montague, and Bill Wallace as Stump. Brother Hugo and Simkin were played by Phil Nice. Harold and the Rebel by Stephen Tompkinson, Emily, Miriam, and Simkin's Mother by Caroline Gruber, and the Librarian, Nigel the Nettle Plucker, and the Innkeeper were played by John Badley. The producer was Dan Patterson.